It was common knowledge that Dr. Hardmore's favorite book was Alice in Wonderland. This, of course, was because he used to read it to his daughter when she was sick, and she was sick for most of her short life. She liked to pretend that she was Alice, and he even had an Alice costume custom made for her to play in for as long as she could play. When she died, she was buried in that costume. That's what people say, anyway. But I'll be honest here, I don't really care why he was obsessed with Wonderland. Money is money. And he offered me a great deal of money to act as the subject for his experiment. It was more than enough to pay for the college degree I'd been longing for since I left home at 18. How could I pass up this offer? I couldn't. And he knew that. Which, interestingly enough, is how I became Alice in the first place. Although I believe that he would say that I'd been Alice for much, much longer. Before we get too far into this, I want you to know a little bit about me, who I am, and how I know the things that I know. Maybe it'll help me to understand why I'm telling you all this, because I myself don't know. Let's start with the who. My name's Bethany, but I used to strip as Rock Sugar. It's kind of a stupid name, but I did this thing where I stripped classic 80s songs, and let me tell you, people fucking loved it. Now, most little girls don't grow up hoping to be strippers, but it was the only way to support myself after I left my hometown at 18, leaving behind an inbred cesspit of ignorant hicks. Never once have I regretted it. I'll be honest with you, stripping isn't really that bad of a gig. But I'm a human being, and just like everyone else, when someone offers me easy money, you bet you're sweet fucking gonna take it. And so, when Mr. Hardmore walked into my strip club, I knew that something was going to happen. Something concerning me, based on the way he watched me dance with a wholly clinical interest. He didn't seem to have an eye for lust, which was why I felt a little unsettled when he paid for a dance and I approached this table. I'm still not sure where he learned my real name or my aspirations. Somebody on the staff must have had loose lips, but I found I didn't care as soon as the first few words left his mouth. $10,000. That was enough to get my attention. What do I have to do? I asked, wondering if he had some weird porno to shoot or something. Once I took the bait, Dr. Hardmore wasted no time in giving me his explanation. The moment I saw you on the street, I knew that you'd be perfect for an experiment I'm performing. It's part of my research at the university, but it's a confidential subject at the moment. If the preliminary results are promising, I'll be getting additional funding from the university. If and when that happens, you'd be getting an extra $10,000. I'm sure I'll have a few to throw around. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But I was already pretty charmed. Still, I wasn't about to volunteer to have my limbs cut off or my eyes gouged out. So I asked him, "What's the experiment?" "It's rather basic, actually. Essentially, I'm exploring the outer corners of human perception. All I need you to do is accept a few injections to affect your perception and tell me what you see, what you experience. We'll repeat this experiment 10 times, and you'll be paid $1,000 for each trial. If you choose to abandon the project without completing all 10, you'll still be paid for the trials that you've participated in." I opened my mouth to accept, but he kept on speaking, so I snapped it back shut, knowing that you never accept an offer until you're sure the best is on the table. Additionally, my work is rather prolific, and as such, I have a certain sway over the members at the university's admissions office. I don't think that it would be a problem to get you enrolled on a full-ride scholarship. That is, if you participate in all 10 sessions. I was sold. He handed me his card and told me to come by the office on Monday. My gaze was almost worshipful as he stood up to leave the club, thinking about how much my life was about to change for me, just out of random chance. I didn't even give myself time to feel curious or apprehensive about the experiment. The address on Dr. Hartmore's card did not lead me to his office at the university. In fact, it didn't even say what university he worked at. Of course, that should have made me suspicious, but I simply couldn't afford to be suspicious, quite literally. Instead, it led me to an old office building in a crumbling part of downtown. The building didn't exactly look promising with its missing bricks and cracked windows. I went in anyway and climbed the rickety stairs to the third floor, trying to avoid the myriad of cobwebs that frosted the corners and the handrails. When I reached his office, I gave a sigh of relief. The door was open, and I could see that at least his room was cleaned and well-kept, furnished with an eye for tactful minimalism. Dr. Hartmore hadn't smiled at all when he tracked me down at the club, but he was beaming now, clearly excited that I'd actually showed up. Oh, excellent. I wasn't sure if you could make it. We both knew that was a lie. The truth is, he wasn't sure if I'd chicken out or not. But fuck, I could do a hell of a lot worse for $10,000 and a scholarship, let me tell you. So, I walked into the office and had a seat as Dr. Hartmore began explaining the experiment in more depth. I only have a few conditions for the experiment. First, I need you to move into the building next Monday once it's been refurnished. That'll make it more convenient for our experiments. Second, you'll need to quit your job, as this will be taking up a large portion of your time. Third, and finally, you'll need to listen to everything I say. You may ask questions, but know that whatever I ask of you, I ask for a reason. It is imperative for your safety and the safety of my staff that you do as I say. Now, if you're still interested, know that all your expenses will be provided for over the course of the trials, and the rest of the staff and I will be staying in this building as well, should you need anything. Now, Bethany, are you still interested in my proposal? You must be absolutely sure, otherwise I don't feel comfortable signing you on for this project. I'm comfortable. I'm perfectly fine with all the conditions, actually. Well, no, maybe I wasn't. Maybe those conditions sounded a bit peculiar and raised a few red flags, but the moment Dr. Hartmore showed signs of backing out, I practically leapt out of my seat to stop him. I needed this. Badly. Excellent. Then I'll see you next Monday. Dr. Hartmore was good on his word, and when I arrived at the building a week later, the inside looked brand new. The floors had been scrubbed and waxed to an unearthly shine. All the rooms had been furnished, even the ones that didn't look as though they were being used. And the facilities had been updated and, in some cases, rewired. Fortunately, it looked much less like a haunted house about to swallow me up from the inside. Unfortunately, now it looked like the inside of some sort of alien ship, and I wasn't sure if the swallowing was still on the menu or not. Dr. Hartmore was busy that day, attending to a few last-minute renovations, and it struck me then how much money this man must have if he was able to make such huge changes on such short notice. Then a young woman dressed in a charcoal gray business suit smiled and led me into the room on the third floor. The accommodations were nice, much better than I'd been expecting, and the room was clean and homey, and I noticed as I looked out the window that all the windows had been replaced as well, as all the cracks in the glass were missing. "Why did Dr. Hartmore go to all this trouble?" I asked. The woman, who had identified herself as Shelley, shrugged and said, "The doctor's a somewhat peculiar man. He likes things done a certain way, and he has enough money to make it happen. Anyway, he's a good man. You don't need to worry about him." And I really wasn't all that worried, as Shelley closed the door behind her, leaving me to my unpacking. Although a few alarm bells certainly went off when I discovered that the windows did not open, it seemed as though they were permanently sealed shut. That night, we began the first experiment. The laboratory was a room so large that it took up a majority of the second floor. It was divided into two sections. One section held all the inboard medical equipment that I expected to see. The other section was a room much like my own, but this room was decorated just a little differently. The walls were painted blue with white trim, and the bed had a comforter to match. There were characters painted all over the walls. Caterpillars and bunnies and mice and Alice in Wonderland. I muttered, astounded by the great care and detail in which they were painted. At the bedposts, I noticed there were a set of four restraints. These are just a precaution. We'll only use them if absolutely necessary. People react differently to the medication, and some of them tend to get a little restless. It really is just a safety measure. I'm not sure if... My voice trailed off. I didn't want to give up on what Dr. Hartmore was offering, but I found it almost impossible to set foot in the room. 2,000 each session, he said. Well, when you put it that way. I walked inside and sat on the bed. He instructed me to lie down and get comfortable, which took some doing because the sheets were tucked in so tight it was almost impossible to get under them, but I did, and a nurse came forward with a syringe filled with a strange glinting liquid. Now, I'm going to give you this injection, and then I simply want you to relax. You're going to start feeling drowsy, and that's perfectly normal. In fact, I expect you to fall asleep. I'll be reading to you aloud from a book to keep you calm should you begin to feel nervous. Are you ready to start? I nodded, and Dr. Hartmore gave me the injection. As he said, the drowsiness hit almost instantly, but I didn't quite feel like sleeping at first. Instead, I felt like I was floating in a strange limbo, my mind and my body experiencing some kind of discomfort. It reminded me of the few times that I had sleep paralysis, and I began to grow incredibly apprehensive. I took a deep breath and focused on the words coming from Dr. Hartmore's mouth. In the interval it had taken me to adjust the injection, he began to read. To my surprise, my unwarranted surprise, I suppose, he had chosen Alice in Wonderland. Something struck me as terribly funny and terribly sick about the whole situation just then. Here I was, lying in a child's bed, listening to a professor read about a world of utter nonsense, watching the paintings on the wall dance and shimmer. I let out a drunken giggle at the thought. And then the next moment, I was falling. I didn't feel much different when I opened my eyes, although my surroundings certainly did. I was in a strange sort of corridor, or maybe it wasn't one at all. It was dark, but it shimmered just a little. And sometimes the other colors, like blue and brown, would flit through the darkness, suggesting a concrete form that I couldn't quite parse out. It was unsettling. But I continued on my way, walking slowly, when something slithered around my ankle and I let out a screech. The scenery changed, or perhaps it was just the light, and I found myself in a forest, one with dense leaves of multiple colors that made me think of poison and toxins and disease. My eyes fell to the forest floor and caught sight of what had wrapped itself around my ankle. "Who are you?" demanded a voice. It was hard wrenching my stare away from the tentacle snaking up and down my calf, so I didn't. Instead, I followed it to a body. It was a big, puffy, furry body that seemed to have sprouted 5 or 6 tentacles. One of the tentacles was shorter and furry, almost like a tail if it were not for the stinger on the end. The head was rather large, but it was undeniably a cat's head. The creature attempted a smile, but it came out as a sort of lopsided sneer, as though it wasn't quite sure how to use its body. I said, "Who are you?" In another world, in another life, I knew the answer to that. I was Bethany. Some nights I was rock candy, but today I was someone different.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
"I'm Alice," I said, feeling somewhere inside that this was good. This was right, although I couldn't remember why just then. The strange cat creature scoffed a little at me. "You're not Alice," it said. Its tentacle recoiled from my limbs and moved to scratch behind its own ears. The action, for whatever reason, was incredibly unsettling. "Alice is already here. She's gone to tea with someone or other over at some place or other." "And just who exactly are you?" I demanded, feeling a little put on the spot. "Who am I? Who are you? What does it matter? It's all the same here anyway." "And where is here?" "Where do you think?" This time I was sure of my answer. "Is this Wonderland?" "Of course. Where else would we be?" I shook my head. "This is insane. That doesn't make sense." "How nice of you to notice." The cathead grinned at me as the tentacles began to wiggle in excitement. Something about the whole exchange seemed wrong. Our words weren't even matching up. The flow of speech didn't make sense, but that didn't really matter right now. There was something much more urgent that needed my attention. "You said I'm not Alice, and you know where she is. Where is she?" "I believe I told you before. Or was that after? At any rate, she's having tea." "Where do you have tea?" Before the beast could answer, I answered for it. "With the Hare and the Hatter." "Naturally." The Cheshire Cat smiled at me, and I tried to smile back, although it felt more like a grimace of fear. "And you can take me to them?" The cat heaved a great sigh. "If I must," it said, and its body began to melt in the darkness, leaving only its head and a swirling mass of tentacles to lead the way. And then suddenly, everything was different of a sort. The forest melted away into a clearing underneath my feet, and I found myself standing in front of a table with no idea of how I'd gotten there. I felt as though reality had simply shifted around me to reveal another existence in the same place at the same time. It was different, but it was the same. I didn't have much time to dwell on it when I was confronted with a strange sort of tea party with three participants. At one side of the table sat a monstrosity of a hare. It looked like a mutant, with its long limbs creaking out at inappropriate angles. Its front teeth sank out of its mouth in two long fangs, and there was a suspicious matting in its fur that made me think of blood. It sat slumped over in its chair, its claw clutched around a broken teapot. Inside the teapot floated a dead rat in some kind of murky black liquid. On the other side of the table was a strange-looking man. He was tall and lanky, impossibly thin, with his ribcage poking out of his waistcoat. He wore scatterings of a fancy suit, repurposed and ripped to shreds, only to be wrapped around his body at random. On his neck sat a large hat. The man didn't appear to have a head. And there, at the head of the table, sat Alice. Alice, as it just so happens, didn't seem so strange at all. She was a young girl with brown hair that hung down to her shoulders. She was wearing a light blue dress with a white apron, just like a painting of Alice I'd seen a long time ago. I couldn't remember where. She looked a little like a doll, and I felt my heart ache at the sight of her. I felt with an extreme conviction that I'd seen her somewhere before. "What do you want?" she demanded as she sipped her tea. The liquid in her mottled teacup turned her lips black and my stomach roiled. "I'm looking for Alice," I said. "What do you want her for?" she scoffed. "You're Alice, aren't you?" "What of it?" "Why are you here?" "It's called Alice in Wonderland." The girl gave me a shrewd look. "Haven't you read the story? What would Wonderland be without Alice?"
"But Alice left Wonderland in the end, didn't she?" I cautioned.
The girl shrugged and continued sipping her tea. The hare shuddered violently as she sat the cup back down on the saucer.
"I don't know. I don't much care for endings. It's the stupidest part of the story, don't you think?"
and never had a chance to answer. For just as soon as she said her piece, the world melted into darkness around me, and I was alone once again. I awoke to a nurse beaming over me, with Dr. Hartmore chattering excitedly about the great success of the experiment. The more he talked, the more agitated I became, because everything he said was Wonderland and Alice and Cat and possible, and I didn't like those words at all, not one bit. I moaned and tried to stand up, but the nurse pushed me back down. I realized with a sort of shock that it was Shelley who was attending to me. "No, no, sweetie, stay down. Try to relax. You've done very well, and we're all extremely pleased." "What happened?" My voice croaked a little as I tried to come back to life. I'd seen something, experienced something, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And then I saw it. Painting of Alice on the wall. She looked every bit the same as the Alice from the old Disney cartoon, except for one thing. This Alice had brown hair. Dr. Hartmore rushed toward me just as I was processing this discovery. "It worked. You, my dear, have done what others said was impossible. You've changed the very way we understand life, death, and the space between them." I must have looked confused because he laughed, and even as he clarified his point, "You are officially the first person to visit Wonderland." As you can imagine, once I was feeling a little bit better and had reported the extent of my experience time and time again, I had a horde of questions to ask Dr. Hartmore. Unfortunately, he was preoccupied recording his results with a meticulous hand. As such, I was left to the care of Shelley and a few other nurses. As Shelley got me settled back into my room, I began to bombard her with my pent-up confusion. "I knew you might be confused. After all, Dr. Hartmore doesn't often give more information than is absolutely necessary. Says he doesn't want to alter the subject's perception. Personally, I don't see any harm in telling you what he's after now that the first trial's been successful." Shelley sat down next to me and handed over some light soup for me to eat. As I ate, she began to tell me about Dr. Hartmore's daughter, her love of Alice, her death, and his devastation. But then the story took a positive turn. At least Shelley seemed to think so. I wasn't quite sure. "You see, Dr. Hartmore got a personal glimpse into the face of death as his daughter drew closer to her passing. He was able to see that her world became distorted. She became confused, or so it seemed. She began talking about things that weren't there. That's when Dr. Hartmore realized that she was going into the land of the dead. As she approached death, she slowly crossed into the other world rather than passing all at once, due to her illness, which led him to believe that perhaps the living could, in fact, breach the gap under the right conditions. By the time we'd reached this point in the conversation, I'd given up on soup and so had nothing to divert my attention. I wanted desperately to look at something else, just so I could wipe the skepticism off my face, but it was impossible. After a moment of scrambling within my own mind, I gave up and said, 'Doesn't it seem a little odd to you? I'm sorry, but quite frankly, it seems impossible.' 'But you saw it with your own eyes, didn't you? You saw Wonderland.' 'I'll admit, there were many nurses and doctors that turned down his proposal because they thought it was simply something he wanted to see, but I've always felt Dr. Hartmore was an incredibly brilliant man. If he saw something, then it must be there. But there's a simple way to prove this.' Shelley fished in her pocket and pulled out her phone, typing away at light speed. Finally, she clicked on something and seemed satisfied. She held her phone out to me to reveal the picture. I gasped as I said, 'That's her. That's Alice. That's the girl you saw, isn't it?' 'Yes, but how did you know?' Shelley's eyes glimmered as she sized the picture down, only to reveal that she'd taken it from an obituary. An obituary for Marie Alice Hartmore.
I stared in part horror, part fascination, as Shelley pointed out what I'd already understood. "That's his daughter, Bethany. You found her. You found his Alice." But of course, Bethany wasn't the only Alice, and I learned that rather quickly as the testing went on. The trials were basically all the same. I'd go to sleep in the Alice room after my injection, and I would see crazy things. Over the course of those weeks, I became very familiar with Wonderland. I met the blue caterpillar, who was really very fat and walled around on a mushroom, constantly surrounded by smoke, although there was no telling where it came from. He never spoke any words of wisdom to me, but sometimes he would shriek and make me very nervous. There was indeed a Queen of Hearts, but she was a mad child and her kingdom didn't exist. She'd run around screaming at people I couldn't see and threatening to execute imaginary offenders of some law she'd just created. The dress she wore hung in tatters and blood was always dripping through the seams. It was rather sad, especially the way that she sometimes dropped to her knees and started sobbing. She had blonde hair that was constantly matted to her head with dirt, and she couldn't have been more than 5 or 6. All things considered, I didn't like Wonderland. Which ended up being somewhat unfortunate for me because I was expected to visit often. Dr. Hartmore took careful note of everything I saw and experienced. He made me describe it to him over and over and over again. He also instructed me to keep seeking Alice. Sometimes I'd find her and we would chat, but nothing she ever said made sense or followed a logical conversational progression. Sometimes it seemed that she just disappeared entirely, the tea table abandoned and covered with dust. After a week and a half, I was halfway through the experiments and I was ready for them to be over. I participated in a trial approximately every 2 days, save for once or twice when I felt particularly sick after waking up and needed a little extra time to recover. I noticed that the trials were having an effect on me. I was beginning to feel a bit slow and sluggish, and life was taking on a more fluid tone. I began to wonder what the separation was between our world and Wonderland, and if perhaps I was towing the fine line balance between them. I'd like to say that I got more comfortable with the experiments as time went on, but the opposite was true. The more I visited Wonderland, the more controlling Dr. Hartmore became. Soon, he stopped letting me leave the building entirely. When I asked him why, he said, "I'm worried that you'll get sick or may experience unexpected side effects when you're away from my facilities. That could be very dangerous." Something told me he was lying, or perhaps only telling a partial truth. That voice eerily resembled the Cheshire Cat, who had continued to act as my guide each visit to Wonderland. I noticed the nurses and doctors in Dr. Hartmore's employ were becoming suspicious as well. More than once, I overheard them whispering in urgent tones about something that must have been very alarming, given the way they were wringing their hands and shifting their eyes. The look in Shelley's eyes lost its confident tone as she began to worry, although she hid it expertly whenever she tended to me. The last straw for all of us was the way in which Dr. Hartmore began to obsess over me. I think he treasured me because I represented his only link to his daughter. As such, he stopped calling me Bethany and began to refer to me solely as Alice. Starting the second week of our experiments, he began insisting I wear an Alice dress during the trials. I didn't ask why, because I didn't want to hear the answer. Instead, I reminded myself that I was getting paid a shit ton of money to put up with his weirdness, and I put on the goddamn dress. During the second week, we had trials each day. It wasn't forced on me. I'd agreed to it because I wanted to finish up with this Wonderland nonsense once and for all. I also had the strangest feeling that if I stayed too long in that damn building, I'd never be able to leave. All the tension and worry that had been brewing over the past few weeks came to a head just before the last experiment was to take place. Dr. Hartmore had told me that we would just start the trial at 7 that night, but I began to get jittery and nervous around 5, so I pulled on my Alice dress and headed downstairs, hoping we could start a little early. I was greeted with the sound of Shelley screaming at Dr. Hartmore while the rest of the employees practically bolted out the door, their bags packed and their gazes fixed firmly ahead of them, almost as though they were afraid to look behind them. Do you have any idea what you've done? Does she have any idea what you've done? I thought you were a goddamn genius. Instead, you've been a monster all along. What's going on? Shelley's triad stopped as she and Dr. Hartmore turned toward my position on the stair landing. The room was silent for a moment, and then Shelley's expression hardened. Dr. Hartmore saw her open her mouth as though to answer my question, and he yanked her toward him and hissed into her ear. Not a word. If you tell her anything, you know exactly what I can and will do to you. Shelley's eyes widened, and Dr. Hartmore pushed her away. She stumbled back and stared first at him and then at me, terror obvious in the cast of her features. Then she seemed to collect herself as she picked up her suitcase and headed for the door. Just before she left, she turned toward us and said, "You're damned, both of you." There was a rather impressive silence left hanging in the room after the click of the door shutting behind her. Then Dr. Hartmore turned to me with a bright smile on his face and said, "Are you ready for the final experiment?" And so, I found myself once again in the Alice room, watching Dr. Hartmore's preparations with growing anxiety. Until that moment, it had worked, perhaps a little too well. But just then, as Dr. Hartmore asked me to lie down on the bed, I decided that it was time to stop pretending. I don't want to. I expected Dr. Hartmore to argue. I was not disappointed. $20,000. The tension of the past 2 weeks had curbed my greed, and his obscene amounts of money no longer held sway over me. No, Dr. Hartmore, I'm done. This needs to stop. $50,000. The stubborn cast to his features told me that he wasn't going to accept no for an answer, so I turned to leave, hoping he would understand at least that we'd reached an impasse. I'd gone no more than 2 steps when I felt Dr. Hartmore's hand on top of my arms, dragging me toward the bed. I was momentarily shocked, not only that he would use brute force on me, but also by how strong he was. I had a sinking feeling that I wouldn't be able to fight him off, which led me to struggle wildly in his hold. It took only a few excruciating seconds of Dr. Hartmore to drag me to the bed, at which point he threw me onto the mattress so hard it knocked the wind out of me and left me stunned. Before I could regain my agency, he struck me hard against the head. The world went dark for a few seconds, and everything was tinged with an aching pain. By the time my vision cleared enough to re-enter the world that I temporarily left, Dr. Hartmore had restrained me to the bed. "What the fuck are you doing?" I screamed. "Just once more," he begged, as though ignoring the fact that he had taken my choice from me by force. "Just one more time. And if you do what I ask, you never have to do it again, I promise." "You told me I could leave." Tears were springing into my eyes as I thrashed hard against the bed, bruising my wrists and ankles in the process. "Shh. It's okay, Alice. You'll be fine. God, when I saw you, I think she'd look like you. You know, if she had the chance to grow up. That's how I knew you were the one. That's how I knew you could do it." "Do what?" I asked. Because all this time, he'd only really wanted me to go to Wonderland. There was never any mention of other impossible tasks that stood in the way of my freedom. "If you can cross existences and see Wonderland and the other Alice, then it follows that she too can cross back. And you can show her how to do it. You know how." As his words registered, a sick feeling twisted up in my stomach, a mix of desperate pity and terror. "The only reason I can get into Wonderland is because of the medicine you give me. There's no way I could do it on my own."
Dr. Harpmore shook his head and smiled at me as though I was a foolish child, and I wondered if he truly understood that his daughter and I were two separate people with no real connection to speak of, other than a few exchanges of nonsense words. "You're wrong, Alice. The ability has been inside you this whole time. The medicine just unlocks your potential. And besides, the other Alice has lived once before. Having existed naturally in both planes of existence, it'll be easier for her to cross over, so long as you show her how." "My name isn't Alice, it's Bethany. My name is Bethany," I screamed. Dr. Harpmore frowned and decided he'd had enough of our talk, pinning my arm firm to the bed and giving me the injection. The whole time I kept screaming my name over and over again. But as my consciousness faded and I found myself sinking into Wonderland, a strange voice welled up from inside me and whispered, "Alice." This time when I woke up in Wonderland, I was already at the tea table, staring across the chipped and warped teaware at the other Alice. The hare and the hatter were conspicuously absent. I was acutely aware that myself as Bethany did not exist in this world. I had only ever been Alice here. I wondered what, if anything, that meant. There was a brief moment of silence before I jumped headfirst into the deep end. "Can you come back?" I asked, even as she cocked her head at me in vague amusement. "Come back where?" she asked, fiddling with a half-melted teaspoon. "You're his daughter, aren't you? You're Marie Harpmore? I know what happened to you, and I know you're dead, but if I'm alive and can find my way here, then you can find your way back to the living. And then your father will let me go," I added in my mind. Alice barked a strange, ugly laugh. "Are you mad? There's nothing but Wonderland, always and forever. You can't leave here any more than the caterpillar can, or the hare, or the hatter, or the queen." "You're wrong." My throat and mouth felt dry. My heart palpitated to the tune of Alice's laugh. "You've been here for so long, you've forgotten." Alice suddenly stopped laughing, and the smile fell from her face as she stared at me. "Is that what you think? Perhaps then I should show you the true face of Wonderland. Perhaps then you'll understand." She grinned at me and stood from her seat at the table. All of Wonderland stood still as her grin wavered. No, not wavered. It was melting. In fact, the entirety of her flesh was beginning to drip off her body into a puddle of gore at her feet. I stood still, paralyzed by fear and fascination, until the bone white of her skull began to peek through the blood. As she began to crawl over the table toward me, I screamed and turned to run. I ran through the woods, aware of the gurgling laughter of the monster that followed me. Everything about her pursuit sounded wet and sticky, as though I could hear the flesh dripping off her bones. Tears sprang into my eyes. I choked out a sob, imagining her arms enfolding me, and she suffocated me in her rotting flesh. Our chase was momentarily interrupted by the Cheshire Cat appearing on my path, its hulking body blocking my escape. "Move!" I cried, skidding to a halt. "She'll catch me!" A tentacle slithered forward and dropped a dirty, crusty bottle into my hand. "Drink this," he whispered, and then disappeared. I tried desperately to remember the story. Would the bottle turn me big or small? But as I puzzled over it, the woods around me disappeared, and all that was left was the other Alice and I, trapped and drifting in open space. She ran at me, half skeletal at this point, and I knew I couldn't run anymore. In desperation, I opened the bottle. The liquid inside, thick and red, smelled like copper pennies. I knew what it was immediately, and I choked on the congealing blood as I forced it down my throat. The other Alice paused, staring at herself in confusion. Then she began to grow, and grow, and grow, her eyes rolling in the back of her head as she began to tower over me. Now I could see that her bones had begun to melt as well, and they froze and hardened in place as she grew, morphing her frame into something deformed and only vaguely human. The world paused for a beat when the growing stopped. Then all of a sudden, her flesh fell away from her skin and began speeding toward the ground at me at light speed.
I ran once again, bolting around Alice's frozen frame and practically flying across the ground. As her flesh hit the earth, it liquefied into something thick and black and hideously pungent. It flowed toward me like the river Styx, and I wondered if perhaps that's what it was after all. Finally, I spied a door in the distance, and I suddenly knew that I was on my way out. I sprinted for it, keeping just barely ahead of the stream of death behind me. I understood that I'd only have a few seconds at most to get through the door before the darkness ate me alive. As I approached, I saw that Dr. Hartmore's face was burned into it, the visage of a scream. Instead of a doorknob, his severed hand stuck out limp from the wood. I grasped it and yanked. The door shrieked, an agonizing noise reverberating from the grain of the wood, but it didn't budge. I yanked and yanked, all higher thought process momentarily shut down as I fought for my life. Just before Alice's gore reached my feet, I pulled Dr. Hartmore's hand clear out of the wood. The door remained firmly shut. I stared at the severed hand holding mine as the stinking river closed over me. My screams were silenced by the flow of fluid into my lungs, and the whole world went black. The next time I opened my eyes, after what felt like an endless, nightmare-ridden sleep, I was greeted by a white room, the same shade as the open, endless space in which I'd met my fate at the hands of the other Alice. For one agonized moment, I thought that perhaps Alice had told the truth, that only Wonderland was real, that I could never escape. This, of course, was not possible, and a part of me knew, because I could feel that I was far too lucid in comparison to my regular trips to Wonderland. All this time, I'd assumed that the simple act of crossing over had muddled my brain each and every time, giving my Wonderland experiences a confused feel to them. Turned out I was wrong. Turns out your lucidity can be severely compromised by drug use. But then I'm getting ahead of myself. When I woke up in the hospital room, I didn't know yet that Shelley had called the police and informed them of Dr. Hartmore's breakdown and my location. I didn't know that his injections were really a combination of hallucinogenic drugs designed to create visceral hallucinations that were almost indistinguishable from reality, paired with a sedative to keep me docile during the trips. I didn't know, and he had lied to his staff about the content of the medication he was giving me, keeping them misinformed while deluding himself into believing that my hallucinations had some kind of merit in the real world. He really thought that through extended hallucinogenic use, one could travel between this life and the afterlife, and perhaps other worlds that existed in the gray spaces in between. The facts were, of course, the first pieces of information I'd learned regarding Dr. Hartmore's illegal and insane experiments, one that his university had no way of knowing about, by the way, considering they'd fired him for his erratic behavior a year before. Over the next few weeks, I recovered from my ordeal and met with the police to give my side of the story. I gained a few more details about Dr. Hartmore and, well, everything else. The longer I went without the hallucinogens, the more I was able to trace Wonderland to the real world. The doctors explained to me that my trips were probably influenced by all the Alice in Wonderland paraphernalia that Dr. Hartmore exposed me to on a daily basis, mainly through his use of the Alice room. Additionally, my assumption that Alice was his daughter turned out to be entirely wrong. Rather than resembling his daughter, she much more resembled my younger cousin Katie when she was a little girl. The newspaper picture that Shelley had showed me had been blurry and indistinct enough that my mind was able to make a connection that didn't actually exist. In a strange, sick way, it was all just a prolonged nightmare, one that Dr. Hartmore forced me into each night and every night until his death. Yes, Dr. Hartmore died the night of that last experiment. The police stormed the building after receiving Shelley's call, only to encounter him watching me closely, a gun clutched tight in his hand. He must have least expected his ex-employees would report what was going on, because otherwise they might have caught him unawares, in which case he would still be alive. Instead, he tried to fight back, and they had no choice but to kill him. Well, perhaps that was for the best, anyway.
Since I woke up in that hospital room, my life has changed drastically. In a way, I got what I wanted. So many universities were moved by the links I went through to get an education that I was offered multiple free rides at multiple institutions. Which is how I found myself studying international law in New York, living in a plush apartment, and generally moving on with my life. I'd like to say that the story has a happy ending, that I moved on from all the terrible and strange things I saw in my nightmare trips. But I'd be lying to you, and more importantly, to myself. I still have nightmares, at least 3 times a week, about the shit that I saw that night, the night it was all supposed to end. But it never ended, at least not for me. Sometimes I think I see Dr. Hartmore on the street watching me, waiting for me. Of course, every time I look around, he's gone, but the worst of it all is this. Did you know that after you've had a bad trip, you can suffer from flashbacks and re-experience your drug-induced nightmares? I didn't. Not until it happened to me. Just one day on my way to class, the whole street suddenly whited out, and I saw the other Alice towering above me, the joints of her bones fused together, the flesh and skin and blood raining down from her malformed skeleton. I live in mortal fear of those moments. I never know when they're going to happen or what exactly it is I'll see. But I do know this. Alice was right. You really can't escape from Wonderland.